This episode of We Are Libertarians is brought to you by Audible.com. Enjoy one free audiobook courtesy of We Are Libertarians. Choose from more than 100,000 audiobook titles, including works by Ron Paul, Walter Block, Murray Rothbard, and the Cato Institute. Audible.com also has audio of radio and TV programs and audio versions of magazines and newspapers. You can get the Audible app on any mobile device or download the audio to your computer. Go to audibletrial.com/WAL or head to WeAreLibertarians.com and find the link to get one free month of Audible today.
Sure to get down, grab your keyboard. Got a website you must see now. For libertarian viewpoints, this is your joint. Turn the Fox News down. Commentary is a forte. Each and every day, true play away. I can't get it out of my mind. I think about the podcast all the time. A national to the state news. Trust these dudes, it's really, really cool. Spangle, Harrington, and Gold, it's not their fault. Government be acting like some fools. Greg Lentz and Joe Ruiz got some entertaining things for you to read. Oh, baby, it's a perfect 10. You wanna get in, better read now so you can win. But we are libertarians.
No diggity.
You gotta look it up. Are we a libertarian?
No diggity.
You gotta look it up. Are we a libertarian?
No diggity.
You gotta look it up. Are we a libertarian?
No diggity.
You gotta look it up.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians this week. I'm your host, Chris Spangle. This week we have Greg Lenz and Creighton Harrington. We're supposed to have Chris Galt with us, but it is 11:34 a.m. on Saturday morning as we are recording this. I personally have been up since 7 a.m. How about you?
About 6:30.
About 6:30. Creighton?
9:30.
Thanks for talking into the mic. And this is middle of the afternoon. I'm halfway done with my workday, but for Chris, when we said 11, be here at 11 so we can get started, he said, "Oh, guys, that's too early, gosh." So we called him, we've texted him, we don't know what he's doing, so.
We tried.
He's in the Marion County Processing Center right now.
So God only knows what he did. And he's, you know, too bad, man. I don't know what we're going to talk about this week. I know what we're going to talk about. Like, I've done my research, and I've done my homework, and I've prepped our topics, but this is going to be the show where I might lose it, because there's so much stuff that happened this week that pisses me off. There's the, the government giving themselves permission to kill us. There's the cop in L.A. where the cops in turn are just killing random newspaper delivery women. There's, you know, the IMS, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, which is near and dear to all of our hearts because we're here in Indianapolis.
Not true.
Wow. And they've asked for a bailout from the state government. A group of war profiteers, drug war profiteers, have asked for Colorado to end their marijuana prohibition. It just goes on and on and on. And we could talk about Rand Paul and his speech, and I could make stuff up and just make Creighton yell. We could read libertarian reactions to Rand Paul's speech just to watch Creighton lose it. What is wrong with you guys? This is why I live in tents. So there's just so much to talk about. And we have to start with Obama giving himself permission to kill people. Torture, you look at some of the stuff that the Bush administration did, and you go, all right, torture's bad, okay? And we shouldn't do that. But somewhere deep down in the dark recesses of my mind, I go, okay. Then, you know, but that's the problem. You sort of go, I really should, you know, I'll speak out against this, but it is a terrorist and it might save our lives. And I think that then you've got people like Lindsey Graham and John McCain who come out. Well, no, John McCain spoke out against it because he was tortured.
Yeah.
You got people coming out and saying this is wrong and we shouldn't do this. Then you've got the civilian surveillance and, you're Mr. the Republican talking. It's not good. I wouldn't want a Democrat to be doing that, but they're not really looking at my phone calls and, hey, if you're not doing anything wrong, then what's the harm? That old gag. Now we're at a point where the Democrats are in charge, and they've granted themselves permission to kill anybody who's an American under a very broad spectrum. I've just been furious about it all week. It's just absolutely outrageous. What has happened is it sort of leaked and was confirmed by the White House spokesperson a few months ago that the United States government will kill American citizens who are involved in Al-Qaeda and who are on foreign soil with a drone. Who've committed treason, fine. But they're still American citizens. And they've gone over and they're working with the enemy. They're Al-Qaeda members. And they've written a very broad document. It's not the full white paper on the program. The full white paper will be shown to legislators in the coming week. They've released a very generic, broad white paper, which was obtained by NBC earlier this week. And it basically states that if there is a serious threat, then the president of the United States has the ability to order the assassination of this American Al-Qaeda member upon his own discretion. Now, there's a few...
Or
top-level officials.
unnamed top-level officials.
This is, you know, obviously against the Fifth and the Sixth Amendment. We have something
called... Or the Magna Carta.
I don't know. It's just... Again, it's going to be a tense show, because we're all going to agree, but we're all going to be yelling at each other in agreement, because it gets us so ramped up. But then again, I've seen so many libertarians, like right now there's a Facebook argument going on my wall that I'm not monitoring, where I have people that I know are involved in the Libertarian Party, and they're arguing that this is okay. And I'm like, dude, are you high? You know, the people arguing for it, I know, vote Libertarian the majority of the time, and I don't understand it, because here's the main problem with it, okay? You could be seen as arguing for Al-Qaeda, and that's the smear that they try to use. But the problem is that the government, when it erodes rights, starts with the people that are the hardest to defend. It's why the ACLU defends the Ku Klux Klan in free speech cases, because who else wants to defend them? And when the government gets away with taking away the rights, the First Amendment rights of people like the Klan or Nazis, then all of our rights are eroded, and it's a slippery slope from there. And no one wants to argue that a member of Al-Qaeda is a person that is bringing value to the world. But the fact is that you don't lose your American citizenship, you don't lose your rights as an American when you cross the border into foreign soil. And I'd argue that natural rights exist regardless of what country you're a member of, and that every person, regardless of nationality, has the right to due process, has the right to face their accuser.
But they want to kill us, man.
But they want to kill us.
Because then you would never fight a war.
Well,
we're not in a state of war.
We're
not. Tell me where the declaration of war that exists.
That person just speaking was Creighton Harrington, and the next person speaking is Greg Lenz, the token Republican for We Are Libertarians. Go ahead, Greg.
Okay. I agree that it's a huge concern. It is a huge concern that your rights don't extend with you when, you know, as an American citizen. But the guy committed treason against the state. He was due process. We didn't give it to him, but we killed him. But we have to trust our elected officials enough to know when to make that decision.
But what happens when intelligence is faulty? I mean, have you heard of yellow cake? I mean, continue. All right.
No, well, the thing is that they didn't just stop at him. They killed his kid.
Yeah.
Who had no connection.
16-year-old child.
Besides the fact that he was the guy's kid.
Yeah.
And they killed him.
I'm not going to take the position of it was the right thing to do. You know, I trust the president to make the right decision, but I do think there were merits to it.
I think that this is one of them things where it is a black and white issue.
Yeah.
You either have your rights or you don't. And in this case, they're showing complete lack of respect for the rights of individuals. And it is incredibly dangerous for people to be okay with this for any reason, even if you think, oh, well, we're in a state of war, or, oh, he did commit treason. It doesn't matter. Regardless of how bad he was, this is one of them things where I don't care about that guy. I don't care that he was a bad guy and he did bad things. And he spoke ill of the United States. He was aligning himself with Al-Qaeda. I don't care how bad he was. The fact remains that he was still a human. And him losing his rights means that more humans are possible to lose their rights as a result. It is, I think, a valid slippery slope. I don't think it's
logical. Oh, I do too.
I don't think it's a logical fallacy to say that this is a slippery slope.
The American government took the right to life of his 16-year-old son, who had never done a thing wrong except living in proximity to a member of Al-Qaeda. I mean, let me throw this out there. There's, and we'll talk about this in a little bit, there's an LA cop, Christopher something. It wasn't me, or Galt.
it might have been Galt, he's not here.
Might have been Galt, he isn't here. This man has declared war on a government agency, an American government agency. He is terrorizing them. He's terrorizing the city of LA. He clearly plotted this out. He's written a manifesto that he's published online. It's clearly premeditated. And he is serving almost the same exact function as a member of Al-Qaeda, a person plotting to terrorize citizens and the government of the United States of America because of a grievance. And does that mean that this man has no right to due process, that as soon as they see him, I'm sure there are drones. You know as well as I do, there are probably drones tracking him and looking for him. They were looking for his truck. It's probably how they found his truck in, you know, near Big Bear Lake. And they're probably not going to give him a trial either.
They'll shoot him as soon as they see him.
As soon as they see him. But he may be innocent. The only evidence, he looks guilty because of the manifesto. He looks guilty because he has said, I'm going to kill these people, and then they end up dead. But that does not mean, and they have not released any direct evidence that this person has killed anyone. And does that mean that he's not due process?
I mean,
is that what our president believes?
And that plays to the main danger of with this white paper, is that they're saying that even if we don't have evidence, we're just going off of, you know, we don't need the evidence. They're saying we don't need the evidence to basically be judge, jury, and executioner. So they may have had evidence for Anwar al-Awlaki. And, you know, I still don't think they've released any direct evidence that he was involved with a terrorist act. I think they've just released evidence that he has basically spoken ill of the United States and he's aligned himself with Al-Qaeda. But that he was directly involved in a terrorist attack, I don't think they've released evidence to prove. Maybe because they have it and they don't like it, or they don't want to release it. I don't know. But I think that's one of the gray areas where they never actually released direct evidence to that fact. But they're saying that doesn't matter. That whether we have the evidence or not, whether we have a justifiable reason to say that this person needs to die, doesn't matter. We're going to do it anyway because we are the government and these guys are the bad guys. And that's what the slippery slope is that – I mean, it always starts with, oh, well, this guy planned to kill, you know, 100,000 people in a dirty bomb in a city. You know, there's not a person on the planet that's going to be like, well, that guy probably would be better off dead. Most people are going to probably fall on that side. But what happens when the justifiable reason becomes something as slow as, you know, this guy is printing things that make the government look bad, and therefore, our enemies are becoming more powerful because they're getting support, because this guy's printing stuff that's speaking ill of the government, and he needs to die because they are hurting our national security by their free speech.
Let's make a few points clear about the memo. It's very broad. It's very generic. It's 16 pages. 5 points, and this is gleaned from Reason. Point number one is that the paper doesn't determine the minimum requirements necessary to render such an operation lawful. So it's very open-ended, it's very broad, it's very generic, and it's based on not a rule of law. It's not a rule of, it's not, I would assume, it's not an executive order, which we could argue is not necessarily law, and then it's not in the Constitution. It's not an act of Congress that power has been granted. It's a white paper determined by the executive branch, which is point number two. The executive branch has granted this power itself solely. It hasn't gone to Congress. It hasn't been amended into the Constitution. There are no set rules or defined. There's no peer review. There's no council of former special operations or former joint chiefs of staff or former military members that review this. There's no members of Congress that review this. It is at the sole discretion of members of the executive branch. It cites that this is an imminent threat, that it is not something where, you know, the guy has a plan for an attack. It's a Jack Bauer situation is the best way to put it into shorthand. It's not necessarily something where this person is planning, but I don't know how we know that, because we're never going to know the details. Our leaders in Congress are never going to know the details. They could say it's an imminent threat, and we just have to trust them. Members of Congress can call them up and say in before a committee, and they could say, well, it's we're not going to talk about it because it was an imminent threat and it's national security, so we have to keep it secret. Fourth, it's used only in cases where they cannot or are not able to capture this person. Fifth, the permission from the nation government is not needed. They don't need to go to Pakistan. They don't need to go to Yemen. They don't need to go to Russia or Britain and ask their permission. They may try, but in cases like bin Laden, they don't ask. They just invade, and they take him. And I'm not saying that that's always the tough part. It's like, do you say we shouldn't have gone into Pakistan and invaded Pakistan and taken bin Laden dead or alive? I know Pakistan had a problem with it, and the fact is that if Yemen or Iran or North Korea or China or Britain or France had a memo that was put out by their government that said, we don't care if this person is an imminent threat, we're going to send a drone into the United States, fly a drone over Plainfield, Indiana, and kill a suspected terror leader without any due process and without telling the United States government. We as Americans, our press and our government would freak out and declare war on Britain, on France, on China, on North Korea. Who the hell are we that we get to say that we get to invade other countries without working with them and killing people in their country? And their citizens. I don't understand how people are defending this, especially libertarians. What the fuck's wrong with you people? Try and defend it, Greg.
No, there's more to it than that, though. Like, with Alaki that we killed, and we killed his 16-year-old son, is it worth sending the military in to try to extract him and give him his due process? No, because if one of our military men dies, it's not worth it. But we just let him stay and plan and not try to work with the government to go in there and get him? I mean, to me, we did the right thing. I'm sorry.
But the thing is,
it's not legal. It's dangerous as far as the theory.
But is any criminal? I mean, you could say the same argument when they go to arrest the guys. Let's say the Hollywood shooters back in the 90s that strapped up and put the bulletproof vests on and had the armor piercing rounds. And let's say that if they didn't get killed in the street, let's say they were found hiding out, and would it have been worth sending in a group of SWAT team to go and grab them and, you know, arrest them? Because the guys could have killed the SWAT team. I mean, the guy, you can't say that it's worth, I mean, if a guy's going to join the military, he understands that there's a possibility that he could die. And to say that because that his life is valuable, we therefore must not sacrifice his life for the sake of rights of individuals, when they know signing up that they are going to be put in harm's way. I mean, would it have been practical to send an entire military operation to go arrest him and bring him back? Practically, probably not. That, I mean, there could have been people dying. There could have been Americans would have died. But nevertheless, when we take that step and we say that this person, it's just too hard, it's going to cost too much money, or it's too impractical to do this, therefore, everything that we that America, Western civilization has advanced far as far as the rights of individuals in relation to the state, we'll just forget about those because this guy, it's going to be too impractical to get him. I mean, that's the danger, is that it's not so much an issue of, you know, the ease of the getting him or how that would just make everything so convoluted. It's like, yeah, it would make things convoluted. But the other option is moving towards moving away from what we've advanced for the past 1,000 years. And as far, I mean, we're talking about stuff that was put in the Magna freaking Carta that we're trying to throw away now because for the sake of practicality. And
look at
and
the Castle Doctrine. The Castle Doctrine and property rights are being eroded constantly and more quickly than they have been in ever in America. You're exactly right. We're eroding the Magna Carta. We've gone past the Constitution now.
I mean, I understand what everybody's saying is that this guy was a terrible guy and that Americans are more important and, you know, we can't sacrifice American lives and that we're in, you know, these guys want to kill us anyway and we could put him a drone in there and we could save American lives and get him and he can't do it. I understand all of that. What I'm saying is that the danger to everyone else in America, because that principle has been stepped over, that line has been crossed, the danger in the long term is so much more severe than the danger that Anwar al-Awlaki could pose to the United States citizens. And that's the sad fact, is in the long run, with this protection gone, we are in more danger than we would be if Anwar al-Awlaki was sitting there trying to plant, you know, hate speech against America. I mean, that's the sad fact, is that, I mean, you want to rely on your government, but history has shown that government is not necessarily the person to put your faith in.
Look at L.A. The government in L.A., the police force in L.A. has been completely immobilized and paralyzed by one person. One person without any regard for law. And they're completely shut down. We have to, with the war on terror, start weighing our rights versus the war on terror. In Afghanistan, we've had General Petraeus say that we're fighting maybe 70 al-Qaeda members in Afghanistan, and that we have shifted a war from fighting al-Qaeda to and getting rid of al-Qaeda bases and getting rid of the launch pad for al-Qaeda to now we're fighting civilians in Afghanistan because it's the same principle. When and if Canada invades Indianapolis, We will be the resistance. We will be pissed off that Canadians are telling Greg Ballard what he can and can't do, what the citizens of Indianapolis can and can't do, where they can go and where they can't go, and trying to change our culture from an American culture to a Canadian culture, which is far less of a shift from an Afghan Muslim culture to an American culture, to Western culture. Because Canada basically has just copied everything from America. I mean, it's...
And sprinkled some socialism on it.
We have to start... And we've talked about nationalism in the last episode, and that is a lot of this. The idea of American exceptionalism... America is exceptional. America is a great country because of our founding documents and because of our people. But it doesn't mean that American exceptionalism gives us the permission to pretend that we are better human beings than other human beings, that our government gets to do things that other governments can't do or that its citizens can't do. You know, we have a clear example in IMS, which, again, we'll talk about in a bit, where if I want to start a business and the business I work for, I'm not going to get government loans like IMS. I'm not going to get corporate welfare handouts for my business. So why should IMS? Why should the Colts? Why should the Pacers? Our government is doing things that regular citizens cannot do. And we're creating a class of people that are above the law, and that is in direct conflict to our founding principles. When we invade other countries, when we interfere in other countries, why are we surprised that that pisses the other countries off? Because if it happened here, then we'd be just as pissed off. We'd start fighting the Canadians if they invaded us.
But they want to kill us, man.
But
they want to kill
us.
They
want to kill
us. Don't you get it? They want to kill us. Therefore, everything we do in America must be sacrificed because they want to kill us. Haven't you heard Lindsey Graham? We're at war, man. They want to kill us.
I will post on We're Libertarians and on the Facebook wall in the next day or so a video that every single person needs to watch, and it's about Iran and World War III. and the seeds for World War III were started by the United States in the 1950s. And it's because we had an oil-rich country, a developing society that wasn't necessarily Western culture, wasn't necessarily Western-friendly, but did have a lot of resources. And they started to become a fairly powerful country in the Middle East. And they had a democratically elected person. And the American government killed that democratically elected person and installed the Shah of Iran. With the help of the British. The people revolted. They put in the Ayatollah. And that's what has spawned what we're supposedly fighting against now. We have continually created created the seeds of our own misery.
I mean, we trained Osama bin Laden. We trained the Mujahideen against the Russians in Afghanistan, and that is the direct result of that training was to use it against Americans. I mean, yeah, there is a long history of hiccups that turned into, you know, big problems for us because it's so hard to say that, you know, we should have done something different in the Cold War. Because, you know, the Soviet threat was so much more ominous than the threat from Islamic terrorism or radical Islamic terrorism. But the fact remains that, you know, this enemy exists to a large extent because we helped create it. I mean, that is the sad fact of the matter.
We just sent F-16s to the Muslim Brotherhood. And I will say, I will give Barack Obama credit. I found out today while doing research for the show that the majority of the president's advisors were in favor of giving the Syrian rebels as many arms as they wanted. And it was Barack Obama, against the advice of the military, his national security advisors, Joe Biden, which, come on. And
he doesn't get enough credit.
So Barack Obama said, we are not arming the rebels, the Syrian rebels, under any circumstances. And I know that that's probably going to piss Republicans off, but it was a good move because we're not going to be fighting our own weapons in Syria in 30 years. Greg?
I don't know. I feel like if I say anything, I'm going to get crapped upon, but...
You will.
I guess I don't see things. I see the theory. I see what you guys are saying. I see, you know, we're bound by our principles. We should act in this way. But I tend to be pragmatic. I think the world's a safer place by killing him, Anwar al-Awlaki. And I understand it's a slippery slope, and I think it's valid in this point. But we have democratic and free elections. And if it gets to a point where we don't like something, we can have those elections and change direction.
Would
not with the case of precedent, you know.
Would anything that al-Awlaki was planning, would it equal 9/11? What could al-Qaeda at this point do?
Don't forget that the larger issue here is that they're saying they can do it even if they don't have any evidence.
Right.
I mean,
just because he exists on the planet.
It's like, I mean, it's one thing to talk about al-Awlaki as being pragmatic. A pragmatic solution was to just blow him up. But the larger issue is that even if we don't have any evidence that this guy is even planning anything, the president still is claiming the authority to kill them without a charge or trial if they're American citizen anywhere on the planet. That's the big problem, is that it's literally giving them a get-out-of-jail-free card anytime they want for any reason. That is really – they say, not saying it in so few words, but they're saying that any person on the planet for any reason, whether they have evidence or not, can be killed without charge or trial by the executive branch of the United States with authority granted to himself without the consent of Congress, the judiciary, or the people. That is the big step, and that is the problem that I think a lot of people are having with this. I mean, you can bring up that we killed Nazis, Americans that went over and joined the German forces in World War II. We killed them without charge or trial. We killed Anwar al-Awlaki was going to do something. Those are arguments that can be had, and I don't think that they're necessarily valid. But those are almost straw men to the argument that is being made. This white paper is that it doesn't matter if they have evidence. It doesn't matter if they have planned anything against the United States. They can do it anyway. That's the problem, and that's the big slippery slope, and it's coming, I think, because we have this culture that is emerging because we've lived in it. We're a generation of war that we have to do these things because they're going to kill us, and that we have to give our elected officials this kind of authority. We have to have the president make these kinds of calls because it's a new kind of world order where, and I shouldn't have said that because it makes me sound like a conspiracy theorist.
Galt showed up.
Yeah, apparently Galt's here.
I didn't mean that in the sense of like conspiracy theory. I mean, it's a new kind of paradigm where people think that the president has to make these calls because of the world we live in has changed, and it's this culture of war, this culture of fear is really, it's a culture of fear. We have lived in fear for so long that it has allowed this stuff to go by. It's allowed this step to be taken, and we support it. I mean, you posted the picture on the Facebook page the other day. 78% of MSNBC viewers support this. Yep. Now, a lot of that is probably partisanship, but nevertheless, I mean, there was a time when people revolted against a country over 3 pence of tax on tea. This is ridiculous.
The conservative pundit class has made a very good point that impeachment proceedings would be drawn up at this point if this had been George Bush. And there would have been investigations and there would have been congressional hearings. And I'm not hearing any of that. And that's because this is a Democratic president who is doing it. So people don't want to criticize the people who might normally disagree with this action, don't want to criticize a member of their own party. And the Republicans are okay with it, by and large.
I know. I was listening to, I think it was the Dana show the other day. And I think
you really like this Dana show.
Well, Dana Lash.
It's all I listen to like Greg in the morning on my way to school, and when I get
you
out
listen
of,
to Greg Garrison.
Greg Garrison
in the morning on my way to school.
Boo!
I just listen off the show.
I can't help it. I just listen to 93.1 in the morning, and that's the only talk radio I can get a hold of, and that's who's on.
Greg Garrison's claim to fame is that he is the lawyer that put Mike Tyson in prison. And sidebar, Your Honor. Mike Tyson on Law & Order SVU, maybe not the best plan, NBC. I watched that episode last night, and I'm just sitting there thinking, like, he was in jail for rape, right?
Yeah.
So, in Plainfield, Indiana. So, Greg Garrison is a local Rush Limbaugh wannabe who continuously blames Andy Horning, the Libertarian candidate. Like, if Greg Garrison is your lawyer, file an appeal immediately, because he has no ability to analyze something rationally. It's clear to me.
No, he is pretty much
being said, he's a very nice man.
But anyway, I'm listening to the talk radio. I think they had Marlon Stutzman on.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's who it was. I didn't catch the guy's name, but it sounded like his voice, and I've heard him a few times on the radio. So I think that's who it was. And they talked about he's from Indiana. It's the only person I think it could be. But anyway, he said, he goes off about how Benghazi was Benghazi was a terrible mess up, and all these foreign policy failures of Obama. And then she brought up this drone thing, and he's like, well, I think that's one thing that the president has gotten right. I was like, are you kidding me? I mean, they're so stuck. They're so hardcore set on this like foreign policy initiative that Bush started, that even when they have the out of saying, well, at least I can attack him for being a Democrat, they say no. He's good on this issue, but when it comes to things where a Republican would have done the exact same thing if it had been like, as far as
not in Benghazi,
maybe not in Benghazi, but a number of things like invading Libya. At least then, a lot of Republicans were upset that he was giving arms to the rebels without knowing who they were. But if a Republican would have done the same thing, they would have defended it because they'd done it before. They've invaded. They've given people who could very well be. I mean, the Mujahideen is a great example. They support this kind of stuff, but when Obama did it, they didn't. But this one, they can't even close their eyes on this one. They can't even turn their head and say, okay, maybe drone strikes aren't a good thing, at least for partisanship's sake. I mean, it is such a...
Drone strikes are a good thing, in this situation.
Yes, that's what I meant. Okay, they can't even turn their head away and say that for the sake of partisanship, that unwarranted, not extrajudicial killing is bad.
Yeah.
But it's infuriating. I don't understand how you could be so engulfed in such a culture that you're willing to throw away something that has existed and made – it's really – it's the narrative of Western civilization to a large extent has been – I think if you can look at it as a procession of liberty versus tyranny. I mean, how the culture of Western civilization has advanced. The biggest steps taken were steps like the Magna Carta, were steps like the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. These are benchmarks in the advance of Western civilization, not because they're just pieces of paper that allowed a government to exist that exists today. Their advance is because of how they showed a shift towards a respect for individuals' rights, a respect for people in relation to the state, where it used to be the state was just all-powerful. It was God ran the state through the pharaoh. God ran the state through the king. We recognize advances away from that sort of loony thinking, and we respect it. And we have such a culture in America where when we are moving back towards that stuff that we recognize as barbaric, we are defending it because of this culture of fear, because of partisanship. I don't know why, but I mean, it's a sad state of America where you can't even say the Magna Carta is worth defending because we have an existential threat from people who want to kill us in the name of Allah or whoever, however you want to argue that they want to kill us for. Whatever your argument is. Just because they exist and they don't like us, we must sacrifice stuff that we have fought for as Western civilization for like thousands of years.
All right, well let's wrap this up. Greg, final word.
I'm pretty sure you guys have converted me. I mean, I do think, you know, we did create the problem, but that doesn't change the fact we have to manage it somehow. We can't just, you know, turn our heads a blind eye and say, "Oh, we'll reach out to you and be your friend." That's never going to work, but I came in here today thinking I think he did the right thing, and now I'm changed my mind.
Good. Glad to hear it. Yay. Welcome to the club. You're going to be an anarchist by the time we're done with you.
Never.
Anarcho-capitalist. All right, let's move on to another troubling story for many different reasons. First, the fact that a former LAPD officer is committing terrorism on L.A., but also the reaction and some of the things that have been included in his manifesto are pretty troubling. Let's start with
Do an overview kind of the...
I have not been following. All I know is before I left, I was watching and they were talking about it and that they're looking for him at some lake and there's snow on the ground. And that's I know he wrote a manifesto and...
I clicked on the link like three times, and they never published the actual manifesto on Dredge.
He disliked police corruption, so he killed some cop's daughter because that's logical. Something like that.
All right, so this police officer, Christopher Dorner, is a disgraced former LAPD officer who has killed at least three people and is still at large, and is... I guess you'd say deranged. I didn't read all of the manifesto, but I've heard some of the portions of it. He was bounced from the LAPD for making false statements about a fellow cop, and judging from his writing, is no longer in contact with reality. You can find the full text online at Pastebin. It's been excerpted several times. Huffington Post had a good breakdown of it. It's a rambling catalog of real and imagined slights to Dorner, pro gun control statements.
Oh yeah, that was I saw that on.
And shoutouts and condemnations of a dizzying array of celebrities and public figures, including here's a couple of the weirder parts. Willie Geist from MSNBC. You're a talented and charismatic journalist. Stop with all the talk show shenanigans and get back to the core of reporting. Give Piers Morgan an indefinite resident alien and visa card. Mr. Morgan, the problem that many American gun owners have
I did read this part.
With you and your continuous discussion of gun control is that you are not an American citizen and have an accent that is distinct and clarifies you are a foreigner. I want you to know that I agree with you 100% on enacting stricter firearm laws. Revoke the citizenship of Fareed Zakaria and deport him. I've never heard a positive word about America or its interests from his mouth, ever. Then he goes on to say of the following women, you're the most beautiful women on this planet, period. Never settle professionally or personally. Jennifer Beal, Serena Williams. Trying to find the names that I recognize. Kate Winslet, Gabrielle Union, Isabella Soprano.
Nice. Didn't even know her actual name. Outstanding. Hey.
Actually, Isabella Soprano is the girl from Cat House, isn't it?
Oh, it is. I thought it was Meadow Soprano.
I'm not gonna tell you.
Wow, Spangle, how'd you know that?
You how, high school. Natalie Portman, Queen Latifah, Michelle Rodriguez, Kelly Clarkson. Margaret Cho.
This guy had truly awful taste.
Margaret, I don't even know who that is.
Margaret Cho is the Korean comedian. So
she had a show on Fox.
Yeah, a long time ago when we were kids.
It was her and her mom in an apartment.
But the important parts are, and I've got to find this article. So because it goes on to talk about some of the more disturbing aspects of the LAPD. And he essentially says that if I didn't take the following actions, I don't think anybody would listen to what I had to say, because I've tried to go out and explain the problems within the LAPD, and no one has listened to me. In fact, he got fired for it. The reason he got fired is because he saw a female police officer beating up a suspect, and it really set him off. It was brutal and violent. And he reported it, and he made it his crusade to get this bad cop off of the streets. And he paid for it, because his review board, after complaints were filed against him, the board was made up of this cop's best friends. Her best friends were the ones judging him. And he said that is just an example of the corruption in LAPD, and he is targeting the people that he believes are no different than the Rodney King. He said the LAPD is no different than it was during the Rodney King era, and that those people have been promoted. They haven't been pushed out of the department. There was one disturbing part where he said, you know, the people that I'm going after, yeah, I feel bad for the families of the people that I'm going to murder, but the fact is that those people are not the people that they love are not who they think they are. That these police officers have a contest where they take pictures of the crime scenes that they visit in L.A., and then at the end of their shift, they all compare these photos to see who had the grisliest crime scene of the night. Just some really disturbing stuff, and I don't know if you want to read the whole thing, but there was a couple Huffington Post articles that sort of recap some of the claims. That is disturbing, and then that just gets reinforced by the fact that when they're looking for this person, they end up firing on two separate trucks. He was driving, and I'll sort of give you some of the details. He was driving a gray truck, I think a Tundra. They fired multiple gunshots into the back of this truck, and I'm looking 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, I'd say probably about 27 to 30 bullets went into this truck from the back of the truck. Not the front, the back. The back had tinted windows, and it's a blue truck, and it's a cobalt blue. I mean, it's like a bright blue, light blue. This woman was out early morning and was delivering newspapers, and they fired bullets into her truck. This happened at some other location that same morning. They didn't stop them. They didn't stop the person. They just opened fire into this woman's truck. This is just one of the terrible things that have happened in the search. This miscarriages of justice.
They've just ransacked people's homes, having no warrants, just walking through people's houses, whether they let them or not.
They found the truck that he was driving in Big Bear Lake, California. It's an area outside of L.A., up into the mountains, and it's a beautiful area, lake, a lot of skiing, sort of a destination vacation spot, you know, weekend getaway type place. And they have gone through every home in Big Bear. They found his truck burned, so they assumed that he was somewhere in Big Bear. They proceeded to go through every home, whether they had a warrant to search or not, whether they had the permission of the homeowners or not. They went into their homes and searched for him. They did not find him. It just blows me away. I mean, I'm not sticking up for the guy. I don't think what he's doing is heroic in any way. He's a murderer. I think he's deranged. Obviously, if he's praising Piers Morgan, he's something, deranged. Something's not right.
Yeah. Margaret Cho,
he thinks she never. I just can't get over Isabella Soprano. Because, that was.
Well, I mean,
I can't get over you knew her.
Well, the thing, I mean, didn't he kill.
Parents, guard your HBO subscriptions carefully. Your 13-year-old boys may be watching it.
Didn't he kill the daughter of some cops because. Like, he killed the daughter and her fiancé of a cop rather than the cop. I don't remember. Something like that.
He has launched a full-scale war on the LAPD, mm-hmm. and the police officers, in some cases, he said he wanted to kill the officers to get them off of the street because the LAPD would not do something. And in other cases, he wanted to just terrorize the families and bring pain upon people who have brought pain upon others. He's really just... a terrible human being, and it makes it as I heard the breakdown of the story, and I heard some others discussing this entire case, I found myself saying that if this guy had come forward and he hadn't done any of this, like when I read his manifesto, I believe what he's saying about the fellow officers.
Yep.
And I don't know why, but if he had not done what he's done, would I have believed him, or would I have I thought he was a crackpot? And I don't know why I have that reaction, but there's something about the fact that he's escalated to this point that makes me take him seriously versus him just writing some manifesto and releasing it to some LA blog and putting it out there and saying, you know, the media wouldn't have taken him seriously. They wouldn't have reported on it. But then once he kills people, then the media picks up on it and they take him seriously and they're going to start investigating these claims. Why do I feel that way? Do you guys have any clue? I mean, do you feel that same sort of way that because he's escalated, you take him seriously more so if he had not done this?
I think so. I think absolutely. I mean,
Did he go to the media first at all?
I don't know. I don't know the case that well.
I think we've got to a point where everyone has a platform, it's so hard to be heard anymore, mm-hmm. that he probably just got to this point and felt, this has happened, it's a wrong, and I'm willing to die for this cause.
He stated that being a police officer was his entire life.
Yep.
And because they took being a police officer from him, and they took his life from him, he was justified in taking theirs.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly, the logic of this guy is, I mean, you know, it's one thing to say that maybe... I mean, I'm not supporting him killing anybody, but it would be easier to see the logic behind him killing another cop if he had a grievance against the cops. But to kill their family just because they did something wrong to you, I mean, there is no logical step there at all. But
this has been brewing for a while, though. I'm sure it started out as something. Well, I'll probably leak it to a reporter. Didn't get picked up. I'll try to go through, you know, channels within the police department. Nothing happened. It finally snowballed, and then he lost touch with reality, and so he just now is hell-bent on retribution.
I know, and it's sad because...
You will probably see a pattern of escalation. You're right.
The reaction of how the police department has so totally botched the search for this guy. They killed innocent people. With a truck that didn't even look close to the description of the truck.
They didn't die. they have the same lawyer. It's just fluke that same situation, same manner, where they basically have their truck shot up from the back. They're delivering in separate parts. They don't even have the same type of truck as this guy. They're alive. They're going to make it, and they're going to get a lot of money. They're not going to be delivering newspapers anymore.
Nope.
The taxpayers in L.A. are going to make sure that they are probably living in...
A big mansion right next to Natalie.
He's going to be living next to Natalie Portman and Isabella Soprano.
This seems like an issue where I think in the future, after everything starts to die down, and maybe they find the guy, they kill the guy goes... They still search for the guy, it'll be different. But after they find him and after he either is arrested or he dies, I think... This is one where there's not going to be a clear-cut case of, you know, he was the bad guy and the cops were the good guy because of how the cops have tried to search for him. I mean, just shooting up a random car because it looked close to it, going through people's houses without asking. I mean, these are things that they're not going to be like, oh, it's okay. This, they were looking for this guy. I mean, these are just like egregious steps that I think are going to paint the LAPD.
The general public's not in any trouble at all. Like, they're not under any safety problems.
It kind of validates his point in the way that they have conducted the hunt for mm-hmm. this guy. And it's a good lesson for all of us to learn, I think, that one person, a Joker-like figure, somebody who just wants to see the world burn and has some weird sense of perverted justice, can bring upon terror and chaos amongst the people who are supposed to bring law and order. And that you really can't rely on the police for your own safety because they can't protect themselves.
Yeah.
So, it's a scary situation.
I mean, we could probably... I mean, I don't know. They're still looking for him by the time I left. You popped on the news. They might have found him already, but...
I don't think so. Not as of now.
No.
I'm fairly certain. I'm getting... I love our local news media. I think they do a good job. But if you send me one more push notification for a traffic accident that is supposedly breaking news, I don't care if there's a fender bender on Benford Boulevard. It's not breaking news. So I get 9 million push notifications for breaking news, and I don't have anything. So I'm sure he's still alive and well and crazy.
Yeah.
So, all right. Final thoughts on this topic, fellas?
I'm going to be interested to see like if there is a cause that kind of pops up on behalf of this guy, because there's been so much erosion in trust in the institutions in this country that this could be just another signal that now we don't trust the federal government. Now we don't even trust our local police forces.
He becomes almost an underground hero.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, there's several news stories we can, there's just so much this week. Like last week, we're just kind of BSing our way through a show. This week, it's just outrage after outrage. So we could talk about IMS, or we could talk about the Postal Service. Your dealer's choice here.
I'm good with both if you want to try to squeeze them in.
All right. Okay. Let's do both. Speed round, because we got about 10 minutes left. First is the Postal Service. The Postal Service announced this week, and let me pull up the story here, so we can pretend to inform you. The Postal Service this week, faced with billions of dollars in losses, announced this previous Wednesday that they will stop Saturday delivery of letters, a sweeping change that immediately drew criticism from postal unions, some businesses, and lawmakers. This is from the New York Times. The post office said a five-day mail delivery schedule would begin in August and shave about $2 billion a year from its losses, which were $15.9 billion last year. The Postal Service would continue to deliver packages 6 days a week, and post offices would still be open on Saturday. This is in line with several industrialized countries, such as Australia, the neighbor to the north, which shall not be named, Sweden, which all deliver 5 days a week. And they have taken a tremendous amount of losses, and they essentially what happened is... The federal government required a prepayment on some pensions from the post office, and that very large payment from the Postal Service to the government for various federal government schemes that they were trying to fund at the moment really put the federal post office into a hole. So the Postmaster General goes to Congress sometime within the last year, I think it was April of last year, of 2012, and said to Congress, please, let us be a little more autonomous. Let us pretend that we are a real business. Let us change and adapt. Quit hamstringing us. Let us change our business model so we can survive. And Congress said no, mostly because postal worker unions threatened elected officials. And so now they're in this predicament. Do you guys have any need for the post office as young men under 30? I have a P.O. box. If you go to wearelibertarians.com and you go to the contact section, you can send us mail. If you're going to send us mail bombs, then I'll give you Galt's address. I do go to the post office to get mail out of my box just so we have a public thing, but I could get that at UPS. I could get that at FedEx. And you know what comes in my mail? Printed magazines,
yep.
which are Junk. Going to be extinct in about 3 years. You know, I love magazines. This is what I get a month. All right, so I probably get a dozen magazines a month. But I could get that on the iPad when I replace mine. Do we have a need for 6 days a week delivery? They're going to deliver medicine. They're going to deliver to packages. So what's the big deal? Why are we all pissed off about this?
Well, the only people that are pissed off about this are the people that see it as, you know, like a government program for employing the worst among us. You know, it's almost more...
Postal unions are mad.
Yeah, it's basically a redistributive strategy to employ the people who are... They're the employer of last resort. They're the employer of last resort.
Full disclosure, I worked at the post office.
Exactly. Okay? Point proven.
You son of a bitch. My dad owned a janitorial company for many years, and our final account was the Circle City Post Office downtown. It's employed with very nice people, okay? Maybe one of them are listening, hearing what you're saying, Greg. So I want to stick up for them because they do work hard. And the fact is that the people that work at the post office are
They're pooped on.
People who work at the post office. Now, you know, they're sort of cushy union jobs. You get a postal union job, you get a nice income for a long time, and you get a pension.
Healthcare.
It's a pretty nice job. In a lot of cases. Not necessarily the most fun job. It'd be great to deliver mail today because it's sunny and beautiful and 45. Not necessarily if you're in Boston and you're delivering mail. And think about all the walking that you actually have to do if you're downtown. So has its ups and downs like any job. And the reason that most of the people, when this would come up and I would ask them about that, they would say, this is going to cut my hours below 40 hours a week. Or several of us are going to get fired. They're going to cut our jobs. If we cut off Saturday deliveries, then some of us are getting fired, and we don't want to see the people that we work with get fired, or we don't want to be part-time employees, technically. So from their perspective, I could understand that. You know, but as a taxpayer, tough.
Yeah, I mean,
any company that has to downsize because their stuff isn't as in demand anymore.
It's not a morality thing. It's just we can't support it anymore. We cannot keep doing it. Like, if you want to solve this, you know, get rid of the post office. You know, fold in the pensions and all that into the what's that? The federal retirement fund that they for bankrupt companies.
Mm-hmm.
And then have UPS, FedEx, and DHL deal with it for a while. If it starts messing up, it turns into a problem, federally charter them like the Federal Reserve or like, you know, banks.
Yeah, but that brings up another point. There are 17 specific things in the federal constitution that the federal government was supposed to do per the states when the states created the federal government. Let me repeat that. When the states created the federal government, the post office is one of those 17 things. You had one job. Like, you guys can't even do this right.
You could outsource it.
Yeah.
Since you're still doing it.
It doesn't say that the federal government's the only institution that is that can do it. It just says that
What are you doing with your microphone?
It's falling.
Focus.
You got to remember the states gave certain authorities to the federal government when they created the federal government. So therefore, they're saying that we're giving our authority to maintain post offices and post roads to you, and you can do that. That doesn't mean that you're the only one in America, private or public, that can do it. It just means that as far as the relation between the states and the federal government does that. But if UPS pops up and can do it better, which everyone knows they can, then there's no constitutional issue of them doing it. If the government's just butthurt, if they just like, we're going to do the post office because we're the government. No, I think that it's time for the post office to just be put as UPS or FedEx, because I don't even use it for like once every like 6 months or something I get in the mail.
Go take the advice of the Postmaster General. Leave them alone. All right, on to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. The Indianapolis Motor Speedway, this has echoes of
Conseco Fieldhouse.
Yeah, Conseco, Lucas Oil Stadium. Also, when NASCAR in the, what was the fiscal cliff package, NASCAR got a big, for many of their racetracks, got a big check I think $70 million.
For improvements.
For improvements, because they needed to compete with other theme parks. The Indianapolis Motor Speedway, State Senator Mike Young, who, if you go to my Facebook page, it's just look up Chris Spangle.
He's our state.
He beat Dan Kinnaman in the Republican primary.
Yeah, he's your state senator.
And he's mine, too.
And Mike, is. He is. He spoke about this on my Facebook wall because I called him out and I said, what kind of fiscal conservative gets a $100 million bailout? And so he gave his reasons. And essentially he said that we're just basically putting up the taxpayers as collateral so they can get $100 million to finance upgrades at the Speedway, which is more grandstands, which they can't fill the grandstands they have for the races.
No one wants
have.
To go to the grandstands. Yeah, they want to go on the inside where they can get drunk.
Better lighting. So you cannot have a night race at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. It's the largest sporting event in the world. It completely fills the town of Speedway with human beings when there's a race.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because it's half a million people.
If anyone who's not, doesn't, that lives in Indianapolis or lives in Indiana, if you've never been to just the night before the race, just go.
Yeah.
Just go one time. Go to the Coke lot. Just walk down
Georgetown.
Georgetown. Oh my God. It's
white trash Mardi Gras.
But it's so fun. It really
it is
fun.
It's great. The Indianapolis Motor Speedway is fantastic.
Especially when you see the Jesus guys walking around. Repent and ye shall be saved.
So Speedway would have to have half a million people, because they don't release estimates, but it's generally about half a million people that are at the Speedway on race day. At the track, inside the track, around the track, working at the track, and in that little, 4 mile area. Could you imagine at night the problems that would cause for local residents, for police officers, for fans? That's a public safety issue. So that's just short-sighted. You don't need lights. And better video boards. They need to upgrade their video boards, but they don't need the taxpayers to do it. I love the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. They've made bad business decisions over the last 20 years, and because they've killed off their revenue, that doesn't mean that I have to pay for it. I'm okay with these repairs. I'm willing to support the Speedway by paying higher prices, because the fact is they're going to make taxes in a TIF district around the Speedway more expensive, which means your experience going and buying food and beverage will be more. You're going to pay more no matter what, so why not have the Speedway raise their prices on vendors and on ticket buyers instead of making taxpayers pay for it and get a bond and do debt and put us on the hook for it? It's insane to me. They're only putting in $2 million each year over a 20-year period. I don't know. It's just we had this situation here in Indianapolis where we give about $10 million a year to the Pacers. We basically made Jim Irsay. We didn't basically. We made Jim Irsay a billionaire because we built Lucas Oil Stadium for the Colts and expanded
the
convention.
Yeah,
took the
cost and he gets the profits.
He was a billionaire before, though.
If you hold an event, state of Indiana owns Lucas Oil Stadium. The state of Indiana owns it. If there is an event like a truck show or a concert at Lucas Oil Stadium, he gets 50% of the profits from that event.
It's because he didn't want the Colts to leave.
That is how good his situation is with the stadium deal, how rich the taxpayers have made this person. We're still not paying off the interest from the building of the Hoosier Dome.
Yeah.
We have not even touched the principal on the payments for the Hoosier Dome, and we tore that down 3 years ago.
What isn't Market Square Arena? We're still
paying for Market Square
Arena.
Guys, we're still paying on the $50 million on World War I that was put up by Woodrow Wilson. I learned that from Church Napolitano this week. So, debt is perpetual, and that's why
Germany paid off their World War I
real
debt,
recently,
though.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, not too long ago. Like, last year, I think they paid off their World War I debt.
So
we haven't.
It
wasn't even fought here.
The IMS is so compared to Lucas Oil and the local sports folks, they're capitalists. They're icons of capitalism here in Indianapolis. and they have basically given in to the public teat. And it's really, really disappointing. And their argument is that we have paid, you know, a ton of money. Here's some numbers, by the way. I just got distracted. Taxpayers chipped in most of the $720 million for Lucas Oil and $79 million for Bankers Life. That is in the last 15 years.
I tell you what, okay? Man. I live on the outskirts of Marion County. Mm-hmm. It's like... Why don't we just, you know, take that last step over the county line, and then we don't have to worry about all this crap.
Because all the...
Except for the IMS part.
Morgan County are paying food and bev on these stadiums. We now have the highest food and beverage taxes in the country, and we want to become a destination for conventions. Well, guess what? The Libertarian Party of Indiana moved their convention from its north side location in Indianapolis... because all the prices were equal except for the taxes. So our convention this year is in Columbus because we're not paying the taxes. It's ridiculous for the hotel, the food. It's outrageous.
17% on taxes on hotels in the city. So that's 10%, right. That's 7% sales tax and 10% for the stadium.
The city fathers say, well, we can't go back to being Indiana place. We cannot lose the Colts, the Pacers. You know, we can't have the Indianapolis Motor Speedway move to L.A. So
that would never happen.
I know, just joking.
It needs to fail. It really does. Someone else needs to buy that facility. So that family has got to get out. They are horrible.
It's not even the family anymore. It's not even Tony George. George would have never let this happen. It's it's Mary Rose Holman whoever it is. And
I thought it was just her.
I think it's mostly her. Yeah. And she
needs to be out.
She's interesting. I mean, full disclosure, I used to work at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, too. So.
Did you worked everywhere.
I have worked everywhere.
He's a racing postal driver.
the cat house with Isabella Soprano.
I know.
A racing postal driver. Isn't that Lance Armstrong? it's disappointing, and I hope it fails. I hope that fiscal conservative...
Oh, they're going to get it.
Mike Young doesn't... get his wish and doesn't give the Indianapolis Motor Speedway $100 million for stuff they don't need.
I knew I didn't like him. He put his sign in front of dancers on 40 in Plainfield.
Yeah.
The strip club. Mm-hmm. I knew it. I knew he was a seedy individual.
So, all right. Well,
he probably listens to this podcast too.
He might.
It's fine with me.
He might. He's a very nice man. But he has some wacky
ideas.
I
voted for Kinnaman.
Yeah, I know Dan. We went to Plainfield United Methodist Church.
I voted for Mayor McCheeseburger.
All right, well, that's it for this episode of We're Libertarians. Can't really wrap up because we're short on time. We're hurt on Indiana talks, and I had to trim out about 10 minutes of the show last week. So
I do want to do one thing before we go. I want to push a Facebook page that I was introduced to not too long ago called Liberty's Realist. I posted a link on our Facebook page about it. It's a guy trying to basically... fight the confirmation bias that we find a lot in the libertarian movement. So I kind of like it because it's very arrogant and I love it.
It's like the libertarian skeptic or the libertarian moron of the day page. It's basically another, looks like this one seems a little softer because the guy who runs it I follow online and he seems to not be crazy. But I do want to ask you about this because you did promote it and I found this to be a interesting question that you all can go to their page and comment on. Is there such a thing as too much transparency? What does transparency ultimately provide? Has our foreign policy changed since the trove of documents that was released by WikiLeaks? Doesn't really sound very libertarian to me, buddy.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I haven't read that one.
I was going to give you crap about
it. But either way, that and then also don't forget that the... not affiliated with this podcast in any way, shape, or form. Organization, state convention in Indiana, Young Americans for Liberty, is happening on March 23rd, and anyone in the world can register for that if they so choose. Just I posted a link on our website to the page to register for that for. It's on March 23rd. It's an all-day thing. So, like I said, not affiliated with this podcast in any way, but it should be pretty cool. You should check that out.
All right. Thanks, guys, and we'll see you next week. Music for We Are Libertarians is provided by Hoosier musician Brian Keith Wallen. Please check out his website, briankeithwallen.com. The song is Bad Spell. This podcast is produced by What Is a Hoosier Productions.